بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. إذ ابتلى إبراهيم ربه بكلمات فأتمهن. Allah Ta'ala knows everything of the past and of the future. There's nothing that is concealed. Yet in many places Allah Ta'ala will say لِيَعْلَمَ, that so that he knows, لِيَمِيزَ اللَّهُ الْخَبِيثِ, so that he knows, right? So when he says that he may know, what he refers to, he refers to that he may separate the pure from the impure. So this purity comes after a test, after a trial. So it's not that Allah Ta'ala didn't know. Allah Ta'ala knew it in advance. But now, through a little test, people begin to see, alright, this is the test of Allah Ta'ala, and this examination, this test, is there to separate. So everybody says, we love Allah Ta'ala. Nowadays you get stickers, I love you, you love this one here, I love. So love has become very cheap. So love, you have to pay a price for it, that's true love. And this is just by the way. Mutanabbi is a poet, right? So he says, Azlul Awazil, Azlul Awazil, Hawla Qalbi At-Ta'i, وَحَوَى الْأَحِبَّ مِنْهُ فِي سَوْدَائِ. So one is those people that talk about love. They don't know love. Alright, we have a little bit of a liking for them. But that liking is around the heart. أَزْلُ الْأَوَازِلْ حَوْلَ قَلْبِ الطَّائِ. So that love is there, but it's around the heart. وَهَوَى الْأَحِبَّ مِنْهُ فِي سَوْدَائِ. But the one that you have got a real love for, his love is within the heart, inside. So, claims of love, so we, alright, we respect them, we just leave it on the side. That claim, we leave it on the side. But the true love, that is the love that goes, that permeates the heart. So this poetry, they always say it, where they bring it under the discussion of Tahara, purity, right? So they talk about purity, and purity at four different levels. One is minal hadasi wal khabas, right? Talk of purity, but purity at different levels. One is hadas and khabas. Hadas, we know, for our ease and purposes, we call it a ritual impurity. Right? So the impurity is not visible, but it's a ritual impurity, and for that ritual impurity, you need to go through a process. Hadas is of two types. One is when you need to make wuzu, and one is when you need to make ghusl. What they say, hadas asghar and hadas akbar. So hadas is of two types, and you need to go through the purity. Now this lesson of purity is so important that around it revolves your future. The whole future revolves around this aspect of purity. But in Ramadan we're talking of the mind being right. So the mind can be right if there is some level of purity. If there is no level of purity in the mind, can the mind be right? Mind can't be right. So one is that level of purity, hadas and khabas. Normally, the Buzugana Deen of the past, they would talk about hadas, asghar and akbar as well, and khabas, right? Try and remain in the state of wuzu. And especially nowadays, when there is so much of evil, every nook and cranny you look around, some evil, something tempting you, something dragging you, and you can't make out now. It's coming with such a force that to differentiate between the both becomes quite difficult. So one of the things that they recommend to maintain your peace and to maintain your safety is to make wuzu. You may have heard of the writer of Nurul Anwar, Mulla Jeevan, right? So he's a contemporary of Shah Jahan. Shah Jahan is the father of Alamgir. Right? So he was the faqih of the time, and he heard of some alim passing a fatwa on what? The fatwa was on the wearing of silken cloth. So that alim had given a fatwa of permissibility. The one that had sent the question was the king himself, Shah Jahan, and he sent it to the mufti that was known at that time. So when Mullah Jeevan got to know about it, he said, Mufti or Mustafti, dono kafir. The one that is asking and the one that is answering, both are kafir. Sometimes we think about the sahib or majlis being hard, but you get some remnants in the past as well. You get someone, right? So he said, both the one that is asking and the one that is answering, both have become kafir. So he may have said this, why? Because he may have seen the circumstance, right? So the king doesn't need it, right? And the king doesn't need it, why is he asking? You don't need pork, so why are you asking about the permissibility of pork? Sure, doubt, your mind is not clear. So that's why he gave this type of an answer. And this person that gave the answer, he passed on this fatwa, both of them became kafirs, because you didn't do your homework properly. You just passed a fatwa of permissibility. Then both of them became kafir. In the meanwhile, when Shah Jahan got to know about it, he's a king. He's a king of the largest empire of the world at that time, richest and the largest. You can understand what power is about. Shah Jahan got to know about it, he said, no, we'll fix him up, put him in his place. In the meanwhile, his son Alamgir got to know about it, that this is the fatwa and this is what my father intends. So he went straight to the father and said, hey, better be careful. Because Mullah Jeevan, when he heard about this, that you coming armed, said, alright, we'll arm ourselves as well. And straight away he went to make wuzu. Al-wudu silahul mu'min. It's a weapon of a Muslim. So now, he mentioned this to the father, so I said, what should we do? Just somehow try and just make peace. Go and humble yourself and make peace, whichever way, present or whatever, but go and make peace. This morning, some student asked, right? We hear of ikhtilaf now, and then we hear of respecting ikhtilaf. The difference of opinion within the ranking of the ulama, and then we also hear the line that must respect the ikhtilaf of the ummah or of the ulama. So now, you want to know now, to what extent do we take this? Is there any boundary, or it's an open slate, you just keep respecting? Let them see, it can't be an open slate, because فَمَخْتَلَفُوا إِلَّا مِنْ بَعْدِ مَا جَاءَهُمُ الْعِلْمُ بَغْيًا بَيْنَهُمْ the former ummah also had ikhtilaf. وَمُخْتَلَفُوا إِلَّا مِنْ بَعْدِ مَا جَاءَهُمُ الْعِلْمُ بَغْيًا بَيْنَهُمْ. So they had also ikhtilaf. But what was the result of that ikhtilaf? They also differed, right? So one group differed, and they said that religion is something that is exclusive with us. The favors, the bounties of the hereafter, it's just for us. So they counted it as a racial thing. So the basis of salvation was racial, right? So one went that way. And another group went on to another way, and they said, no, you come into our creed, then you have no responsibility. You're free of any responsibility, because man has taken all the burden onto himself. So one side, they counted it as a racial thing, and the other side, they counted it as something that you become free of responsibility, no individual responsibility. And both are illogical, can't work out. Because if it's something racial, then nobody's got an opportunity to go Jannat. It's already an exclusive class, so no matter what you try, but you can't get the merit. You can't pass, because it's only for the race. So I ask you, is the rest of mankind, are they being treated fairly? It's only exclusive to you. Nobody else, no matter what you try, you're not going to get there. So these people, what they tried to do is, they wanted to gain the monopoly of Jannat. What? They can monopolize the whole Jannat. Like how you have business, right? And then someone monopolizes cement, and someone monopolizes bricks. Now everybody knows that you need that brick. Right? Sugar, you need this thing here. And so you monopolize the whole thing. So nobody can come into the market. We got the whole monopoly. So they extended the same reasoning onto Jannat as well. We got the monopoly. We will say who will go and who will not go. So they extended the same monopoly, that business mentality, onto Deen. That what we will say and who we will say, he will qualify for Jannat. And who we don't pass, he cannot qualify for Jannat. So they felt that they had the entire monopoly. لَنْ يَدْخُلَ الْجَنَّةَ إِلَّا مَنْ كَانَ هُدًى. نَحْنُ أَبْنَاءُ اللَّهِ وَأَحِبَّاهُ. Right? لَنْ تَمَسَّنَ النَّارُ إِلَّا أَيَّامٌ مَعْدُودَاتٍ. So we got the entire monopoly for Jannah. You have to come. كُونُ هُودًا. Come like us. So, the religion and all that, that was a secondary thing. Just say that you are part of us. And you will qualify for all the favors. We'll just say that you're part of us, and then you qualify. So whether you are 8 years, 8 years, whatever, but you must just say that you're part of us. So now that's the end of Judaism in this day. They will say it also. They can be a teacher, they can be a lecturer, they can be a professor. Says, yeah, I'm a Jew. That's my nationality, but I'm an atheist. So religion is nothing now. It's just a thing about a race and a nationality, nothing beyond that. On this side, there's nothing about religion, but the fact that you are not any longer responsible. You have a free passport to do anything. Passport and the license to do as you please, why? Right? He has taken the entire burden on himself. So I ask you now, is there an equal opportunity for any other person? No opportunity. Nobody stands a chance. So Allah ruled it out and he says, بَلَا مَنْ أَسْلَمْ وَجَوْ لِلَّهِ وَهُوَ مُحْسِنٌ فَلَهُ أَجْرُ عِنْدَ رَبِّهِ. Whoever it is, whatever your background, whatever you're coming from, what racial background you're coming from, what nationality you're coming from, what material background you're coming from, you meet the criteria, you deserve it. What's the criteria? مَنْ أَسْلَمْ وَجَوْ لِلَّهِ. You give yourself, you bow in submission. You bow in submission, total, unreserved, unconditional submission you give to Allah Ta'ala. So you give an unconditional submission to Allah Ta'ala, and وَهُوَ مُحْسِنٌ, and you do well also. In other words, in the mind you are right, your mind is, I'm giving my whole submission to Allah Ta'ala. That's your mind, right? But physically, materially, also you say, no, I will do well what Allah Ta'ala wants. Allah Ta'ala wants from me, I'm doing it well. So physical submission and mental submission. Your mind is in submission and your body is in submission as well. So Allah Ta'ala says, you got this, فَلَهُ أَجْرٌ, you got your guarantee for Jannah. So now I ask you, is there an equal opportunity for everybody? Anybody, you meet the criteria, you go through. Otherwise, it becomes a racial thing, or it becomes a free-for-all thing. And both things are illogical, right? A racial thing, that you are passing just because of race, right? Or you're passing just because you're free of responsibility. So both are totally illogical. So anyway, this question came in. So I said, these people also see that there's a difference of opinion, right? You view it in this way, the Christian says, and the Jews say that you view it in this way, and we view it in a different way. So will there be any end to this ikhtilaf? That means everybody will deserve Jannah. Anybody, everybody. So you'll have to add the word, it must be a valid difference of opinion. The difference of opinion must be valid. If it's not a valid difference of opinion, then it's rejected. There's no grounds to make a difference. Not just anybody can come in to Islam and do some studies and say, no, I got a difference of opinion. Can't say that. It must be a valid difference of opinion. Now to expound the theory, I give an example. For almost about 70 or 80 years, the Egyptian ulama, right? So first understand now that sunnahs are of two types. Sunnah, one is a sunnah to be emulated, to be followed, right? Like, for example, the two rakats of sunnah at Fajr, right, must be followed, must be emulated, right? For example, to eat with the right hand, right, it must be emulated. To enter the masjid with the right, to enter the toilet with the left. So these are sunnahs to be emulated and followed, right? Then there are other sunnahs that are done, sunnah-e-adiyah, right? It's done as an adat, right? And the sunnah-e-adiyah, in principle, there is no sawab for it, right? It's an adat, you do it, it's good, but you don't do it, it's not done to be emulating, like wearing of a lungi, right? There was a style of Rasulullah Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam, and most of his Mubarak life, he wore a chadar and a lungi, right? An upper garment, upper cloth or a shawl, and a lungi, most of the time. Therefore you'll find, hatta yura biyadu ibitay, right? If you went to sajda, you could see his armpits, right? So most of the time that cloth was worn. But now, that is a sunana adiyah. It's not worn that you must emulate it. Right? But if someone does emulate it for the love of Rasulullah, he'll be rewarded for the love. Right? So there's two types of sunnahs. One is adiyah, a sunnah which is done as an adat, right? And one that is to be emulated. The one that is to be emulated, that you will definitely get reward, and you must emulate. Right? You must follow. Your trousers must be above the ankle, that must be, right? You can't leave that out. Now something came into the minds of this Egyptian ulama. They said that the beard, right, is not a sunnah-e-huda, a sunnah-e-adiyah, what? It was a sunnah, it was a style at that time. It was the style of the time. So because it was the style of the time, so therefore you don't have to keep a beard. Right. The style, that was the custom, that was the norm at that time. So when that was the norm at that time, so it was the right thing to keep a beard. But now it's not a norm of these days to keep a beard. So to keep it, you will not say that it's wrong, but it's not a thing to be emulated. Like how the lungi is not supposed to be emulated, right? Or that type of sunnats are not supposed to be emulated, but you do it, it's good. You don't do it, it's no problem. Now you see now, they got a difference of opinion as well. So when they got a difference of opinion, can you say that that difference of opinion must be respected? Why? What was the basis? It's not valid. It's not a valid difference of opinion. When it's not a valid difference of opinion, then it's not supposed to be emulated. Right? Now the next question that will come up after this is then, what makes it a valid difference of opinion, a valid ikhtilaf? What? What makes it a valid difference of opinion? So what came in my mind at the time, that there's two things, right? If you conform to these two things, then you are within the sunnah, the threshold of the sunnah, and if you departed from this, then there is no guarantee. Right? That it's a valid difference of opinion. So if you keep and maintain these two elements for it to be valid. So what are the two elements? Number one, you mustn't go against the mutaqaddimin, the righteous of the past, right? It was their style, their way, their writings in a certain way, right? When their writings, their style, etc. was in a certain way, then follow that. That's your security. مَنْ كَانَ مِنْكُمْ مُسْتَنَّنْ فَلْيَسْتَنِّي بِمَنْ قَدْ مَعْتِ You want to adopt a way, then adopt the way of those that are past. فَإِنَّ الْحَيَّ لَا يُؤْمَنُوا عَلَيْهِ الْفِتْنَةِ right? لَا تُؤْمَنُوا عَلَيْهِ الْفِتْنَةِ So, the one that has passed, is gone. So, is he going to be subjected to any more trial? It's gone. The time of trial is gone. So, the past, you've seen from the beginning to the end, we didn't see any flaws. So this is the thing, this is a model to be followed. Right. The past is a model to be followed. So the righteous, sunnah adhering alim of the past, he is the one to be followed. So if someone moves away from that, then there's no guarantee. If the righteous, sunnah adhering alim of the past, right. So you adhere to that. And if you move away from that, then is there anything, any guarantee for you? No guarantee for you. So, that's the first requirement. And the second requirement to have a valid difference of opinion is that a person must have a sound understanding of deen, sound understanding with taqwa, right? He must have a sound understanding of deen with taqwa, right? And now you can say he's got a difference of opinion and we'll respect him. Right. You can't just say, I got a difference of my opinion, and that's your opinion. You can't say that. Otherwise, the Jews will have a valid difference of opinion, the Christians will have a valid of the Egyptians who are shaving off the beard, the big Qurras coming here, right, and they are giving the Qirat, etc. So, will you say also they have got a valid difference of opinion? You can't say that. You can't, no ground, no basis. So they are great in the Qirat, right? In that respect, they are great. So, in the recitation, you will respect them, right? Provided they are within parameters. The recitation also is not something that you give them a clean sheet, clean slate, and do whatever you want. You're doing it within parameters. The recitation within parameters. You don't make it a profession. Now, you make it a profession, so then that becomes a commercialized thing. So, you're just looking for the voice and how to charm the audience. Is there anything beyond that? You're looking for a voice and you're looking to charm the audience. Now, that means you have moved away. It is just to charm, just to attract. Now, this thing becomes important. Why? In the course of, say, about 3-4 months ago, so someone from America, he wanted to make some Islam. Normally, I don't just take for bayat, you know. Bayat has become like a style now. And so, We are those that feel that accept the person for bayat no matter what he is, that we respect their opinion. Normally I don't just think that. You know, you start off with your Islam, gradually as we move on, inshallah, that will also happen. So this person wrote up, and after the third or the fourth correspondence, then he's asking for zikr al-jahri. I want to do zikr, but you know how striking the head and with jahr. So, la ilaha illallah, la ilaha illallah. Everybody likes all that. So he asked permission for this. So I asked him, alright, let me know what's the level of your temper and your temptation. Then tell me about your temper and your temptation, and then we'll see about these things. He says, no, I got froth both places. Then he started speaking about his temptation, that I watch wrong things, and I masturbate as well. Alright? Some of these Americans, you give them credit, right? Some of them, not all of them, but when they are wrong, they will say that we're wrong. They won't go around the bush and all, you know, this person said this and that. By mistake, I saw this thing here, and I was just Googling and something came up, and you know, I just got caught. They don't make that story. So, no, I got a problem. So you do respect that. But I got a problem, I come out in the open and say, I've got a problem. Don't go in circles. Right? Going in circles, you'll just complicate things. But you say, no, I got a problem, then we know how to work with you. And you're going around in circles, is there a way to work with the person? It becomes difficult, it's complicated now. So, I got a problem with stealing, alright? You got a problem with stealing? Alright, let's see, how are we going to work you? So, no, I made a mistake, I just saw that thing and I thought it was mine. Now, is it easy to work with a person? I ask, is it easy? It becomes difficult, you're making a story, the cover story seems to be, you seem to be a very good person. But you're complicating matters now, it becomes more and more difficult to treat the person. But had he come in the first instance saying, I am guilty of this and I need to be corrected. So now, one shot, very easily you can work with the person because he's not in denial. Are you in denial? He's taking a drug, but he's in denial. No, I'm high today because I drank some coffee, more, very strong coffee I drank. So therefore, I'm a little bit high. Now you give the story, alright? So whoever was checking you, alright, let him have the benefit of the doubt. You don't want to go deep into him. Forget him now. But is there any way to treat the person? So this has become the kamal. This has become like an act of perfection, you know. That you know how to give up a cover of stories. Hazrat Rahmatullah mentioned this. He says, in logo ke heere ke darwaze itne chore hai. کہ ہیرے کے پھاٹک اتنے چورے ہیں کہ بڑے بڑے ہاتھی اس سے گزر جاتے ہیں. They can make such stories and such loopholes and escape routes that you get a big fat elephant going through. So much. Give one story, you know. So one person came to meet one of the amir of that place. Like, you know, we have in this country, you have an induna. So they have an Amir. The Amir is like the head of the place, very wealthy. He's got authority, he's got control. So he came to meet up and he saw the Amir of the place having his beard shaven, right? So he's got a difference of opinion, right? And then the stories people come up with, that everything becomes legal, then there's nothing haram then. I just have to give up a cover-up story and make it look nice, right? Look nice. So now, this visiting alim has come here, and there's a local alim there, and in the presence of that local alim, this Amir is getting his beard shaven. So, this visiting alim looked up at the Amir, what are you doing? Khaja, she mekun mekuni, what are you doing? What are you doing? What are you up to? So he looked up to that alim as though that alim was condoning the practice. So So he looked up at that alim. So that alim is telling him, no, Hazrat, it is totally permissible for you to shave your beard. This totally permissible for you to shave off your beard. The local alim is telling the Amir, the Induna, it is totally permissible for you. See. The reason is, you see, you've got a little bit of a curly beard. Your hair is a bit curly, right? When you've got a curly beard, so you'll get lice and all that coming into your beard and your hair, right? And then, there's going to be males there, there's going to be females. And these lice are not going to make nikah. They make zina, you know? And zina on your Mubarak beard, how can that ever happen? So for you, it's totally permissible. But now you see, the escape routes that you would escape from haram, right? They found such big gateways to get into haram. Now, won't this confuse and complicate the people? You found a gateway to escape, right? Anything and you got a gateway to escape. Anything you got a gateway to escape. So anything left now. So I explained this thing here, that there must be a precedence in the righteous of the past. If there is a precedence of the righteous of the past, provided it is supported by an alim that is sound in his deen, with taqwa, right? Now that difference of opinion, we will respect. We get in this masjid many a times, a Shafi performing the namaz. But we respect him, we'll put him in front. He'll be saying Bismillahirrahmanirrahim at the beginning of the namaz. We don't do it loudly, right? He'll be raising up his hands at the time of going ruku, or coming up from ruku, right? Or he'll say Ameen loudly. But we'll respect him and we'll keep him as the imam and we'll give him that status. He may be keeping his hands straight in namaz, not folding it like how we fold it, but we'll respect him. Or, forget all the other differences. Hazrat Sayyid Abdul Qadir Jilani Rahmatullah Ali is humbly ul-mazhab, right? He's humbly. But all of us say he's Sayyidul Awliya. He's the leader of all the awliya. Don't we say that? Piran et Pir, Sayyidul Awliya. Don't we say that? So we gain the status in spite of him being humbly ul-mazhab. Now, this type of differences of opinion, we respect. That's why they say, اختلاف عاشقا درکار رب. Remember that one? What's the word? شدت محبت است نہ ترک ادب, right? He says, when there are people in love with Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, pure love, got immense love for Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, they got a deep love. And now these people have got some ikhtilaf. That ikhtilaf is not because of anything personal. It is because of the intense love they have got for Allah Ta'ala that they have differences. The difference is because of intense love, not because of something personal. So I have to give an example to that. Everything I have to give illustration. Har cheez mein misal do, phir samajh mein aayegi. There's five friends I got, right? They hold me in respect. Just for example, right? They hold me in high respect and esteem. So I got five friends. It seems a little bit cold, I need something hot. So he says, no, coffee is the right thing. I've got a machine. He says, no, hot chocolate is the right thing. He says, no, tea is a better thing, man. He says, no, Milo is the right thing. What do you know? Right. So, they've got a difference of opinion, right? But I ask you, the reason for the difference is right or not right. What's accelerating them, what's driving them, is shiddat and muhabbat. That extreme love that they've got, that's the thing that's accelerating them, right? But the moment they discover, oh, he likes coffee, then they won't disagree. They say, hey, let's try and pop it up. Let's go for that coffee, right? So, they've got a serious difference of opinion, right? But I ask you, that serious difference of opinion, is it because of something personal, some mutual hatred? I want to strike a point. Imam Shafi wants to strike a point with Imam You don't, not because of that. It's because of extreme love that they have got a difference of opinion. He said, oh, you like it like this. He said, you like it like this. No. Unfortunately, we only understand and relate to food. Food and drink. Food, khana pina. Nothing else. So you have to give examples about khana pina for that thing to go. I can't say your stomach, your mind. Talk about that, it goes in the mind straight. But you see this. Now the picture is right now, it's clear. It's ikhtilaf. In a different format, I'm sure that ikhtilaf is respected if it is coming from the mutaqaddimin, old, pious, righteous people. And the one that is making ikhtilaf, he is also sound in knowledge, he's got a level of taqwa, a high level of taqwa, and he's sound. So he's got a difference of opinion. We'll respect it. Why must we fight with him? Got any reason to fight with him? No? No reason to fight with him. See, you got Hidayah, right? And you got Qazi Khan. Right? So, Hidayah is saying to take a remuneration for dini services for her, not right. Like you're making namaz, performing namaz, the imam, you can't remunerate yourself. You're calling azan, no remuneration. Not permissible. Istijab ala ta'at, not permissible. Why? Quran Sharif is an ibadat. How can you remunerate yourself for that? So, Sahib Hidayah is saying not permissible. Not permissible. Right? He's not talking about any type of remuneration, no remuneration. Impermissible, totally. Full stop. Then some years later, now Qazi Khan comes into the picture. Maybe a century or so, he comes later. And he says, now, we'll have to reverse the thing, it's permissible to be remunerated for any deity service. Then he gave the reason. The reason he gave is what he says. In the old days, what used to happen, then the public treasury would look after any person that is offering a proper dini service. Right? Is offering a proper dini service, who was supporting him? The public treasury was supporting him. Right? You get a person like Imam Malik Rahmatullah Alayhi. Right? Malik Rahmatullah Alayhi. And there was a person like Lays ibn Saad that was supporting him 1,000 dinars every year. Right, 1,000 dinars. 1 dinar is about 4,000 rand. How much? 1 dinar. I saw the whole thing here. It's about 4,000 rand. It fluctuates. Some go to 5,000, but it's approximately standing at about 4,000 rand. So he would sponsor Imam Malik Rahmatullah Alayhi with 1,000 dinars every year, and then Imam Malik Rahmatullah Alayhi would get into a constraint sometimes. Because the type of mental work that he's doing, then he used to eat that type of food. So it's a costly thing. And he's doing mental work all the time. Day and night he's doing mental work. Right? So he needs to keep himself refurbished, you know, to rehydrate himself so that he can offer that type of service. Right? So sometimes he gets into a financial constraint. Sometimes he's selling off a valuable in the house, some valuable he's selling away, just to see that he can run that type of life, he can sustain that life. And meanwhile, Lays ibn Saad will get to know that he's selling off some of his important essentials just to sustain the life. So, in the course of the year, sometimes he's sending 5,000 dinars, etc., just for him to sustain the life. So, someone objected. I think it was Fuzail ibn Iyaz, whoever objected to Abdullah ibn Mubarak rahmatullah alayhi, that why are you doing business? Remember, just engage yourself in deen work only. So he says, you know what? If it was not for you people, your type of people, right? Then mattajarna, you would have never gone into business. You get into business to support you people. Abdullah ibn Mubarak is saying, I get into business. Why? I get into business for the great muhaddiseen, ulama, sufiya, kiram. My intention is to support them. Therefore, I get into business. So, anyway, I drift a little bit. But what I'm getting at is now, look at Sahib Hidayah, he's saying not permissible. But now you see that zamana, what it was, that, there are some great personalities that are doing great business. Abu Hanifa Rahmatullah Ali, he passed away as a multi-millionaire, not millionaire. Multi-millionaire, right? But he's supporting so many people, Sufyan ibn Sufyan Sauri and all his people. He's supporting Sufyan ibn Uyayna. He's supporting them so much year, 1,000 years, 10,000 years, 5,000 years. He's passing it on. So he's doing the business, but the idea is to support Islam. See, that was the whole idea. That was the reason for them doing business, right? So, Sahib Hidayah is talking of that time where these people were taken good care of. So, that they could engage all their energies only for the spreading, for the preservation and the promotion of Islam. But now that is past. That is past now. They aren't those type of people that are supporting this type of service. So, in the meanwhile, what we need to do is to see that we support Islam, the preservation, the promotion, the propagation of Islam. If they're not going to be capable people, competent people, then how are we going to get this done? Will there be a way? So we need competent people, capable persons to support the cause. So then, Qazi Khan says, no, that was for that zamana. Now, it is totally permissible for you to be remunerated for a service that you are providing for Islam. So that, so long as it's a valid service, not any service, for a service that you're providing for Islam, it is permissible for you to be remunerated. Otherwise, if you're not going to be remunerated, what will happen? Now, it's namaz time, there's no imam to come and lead the namaz. Why? I'm jobbing. Azan time, nobody to the azan. Why? I'm jobbing. Your child needs to learn to recite Quran Sharif. Nobody to teach. Why? I got a job. Your child needs to learn basic maslas. There's nobody to teach that child. Right. Your child needs to learn tajweed, recite the Quran Sharif correctly. There's no qari sahib available. So, when there's nobody to teach Islam, I ask you, will there be anything, any structure left to preserve Islam? Logically speaking, will there be any structure to preserve Islam? So now, Qazi Khan saw the need. When he saw the need, he said, now you have to do it. Whether you like it or not, you have to preserve Islam through these structures. If you aren't going to do this, then what we are saying is that the whole Islam has just collapsed. Because every person, every human being, he's got a human need. He's got a physical, material need. Right? He's got a need. He says, I got a wife and children, and now what do I do? How can I do this thing? How will this work? So, then they ask, alright, is there any maxim for this? Any basis for this? So I said, yeah, there is a basis for it. He says, the basis for this is, simple, in simple words, anybody that is mahboos, then the habis is in charge for him. Right? Anybody that is mahboos, then the habis is responsible. Your wife is mahboos because of you, right? She's within four walls because of you. When she's within the four walls because of you, then who's responsible for her? You are totally responsible. Why? Just for your sake, she kept herself tied within four walls. So therefore, it's your responsibility to take care of her, right? A judge that is presiding over cases, right? So he's mahboos also. He's confined and he can't move. If there's no judge now, will there be a legal system? Will there be justice? So now, the judge has to be doing the work to maintain justice, to maintain fairness. He needs to be doing the job, right? But now if he says, I've got a business to run, right, then can there be any type of a legal system that's functioning? No legal system. But he says, I need to supplement and I need to generate something for my wife and my children. How is this going to happen? So the habis is responsible for the mahbus. The state becomes responsible for this.